The Comedy Zone podcast is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Comedy Zone Podcast. Find us on Twitter at the CZ Podcast. Email us at comedyzonepodcast@gmail.com. Now, your host, Will Jacobs.
Welcome to the Comedy Zone Podcast. Coming at you this election November, October-ish, kind of, I don't know what day it is, but coming to you today, it's me, your man, Brian Baltashevitz. We're here, living La Vida Loca. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you, Will? It's been a couple weeks. You doing all right?
I'm doing good, man. You sound chipper for 9 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, it's all an act.
This
is just pure adrenaline right now. That's all this is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have an election coming up here. Joe Biden right now is on my television holding a town hall.
Yeah, I don't explain to me how a voter could be undecided right now. Like what have you not seen yet out of either side where you're like, I don't know. I'm still not sure.
Like, yeah. At that point, like anybody, okay, can we just say that maybe anybody that is still like legitimately, genuinely undecided has some sort of disorder?
That's fair.
Like you can't make any decisions, right? This has got to be something that covers the rest of your life too.
Yeah, it takes you 2 hours to figure out where to go to lunch.
Right, like do exactly. Yep. It's like, okay, one guy is like one. I mean, I don't even know where to start. One guy is that guy with all the stuff, and the other guy is Joe Biden.
Right, exactly. You've got, I don't know. I mean, and listen, I'm a middle of the road independent. I'm not hugely crazy about Joe Biden, but you know.
Well, I'll say this. I'll tell you this: with black folks, it's there's no such thing as undecided.
Yeah.
Like I was watching CNN, and they had, you know, how they do this panel of undecided voters that they talked to on the night of a debate. Well, they talked to these people, and there was a brother sitting there, and he said, yeah, I'm undecided, and I want to hear the thing tonight that really resonates with me and pulls me to their side and makes me go in there and pull a lever for them. And I'm looking at Twitter, and all the black people said, look, if you sitting right here at this point talking about you undecided, Negro, you done decided. you've decided.
Yeah.
You try to make America great again. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. What else do you need to hear at this point? What else do you need to see to make you go, yeah, okay, I'll vote for that guy. I don't know.
I'm just looking forward to really what it comes down to is considering the fact that I'm a Howard University alum. I know many other Howard University alums, of course, and Kamala Harris being a Howard University alum.
Yeah.
The only real question at this point is, and I've been practicing for this, how high am I going to hold my nose when I say Vice President, Howard University graduate, Kamala Harris? How high am I going to hold my nose?
Not as high as you're going to hold your nose, because let's be honest, what are the chances that 77-year-old Joe Biden sees the end of his first term?
Wow.
Right? So,
wow.
you know, how high are you going to hold your nose when it's President Kamala Harris?
Can I be very honest with you?
Of course.
Joe Biden is, what is he, 82?
77.
He's 77.
Or 78, okay. Somewhere around there. Yeah.
That's right, 78. I'm sorry, because he'll be 82 at the end of his first term. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't, let me tell you something. Joe Biden, okay, I'm going to just keep it real here. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden in his first term could fix health care. He could cure cancer. He could fix the concussion issues in the NFL. He could fix race relations, police brutality, starvation, world hunger. He could do all those things. He could get Michael to finally reconcile with Boys to Men if Michael's still around. But I don't know. I haven't kept up. I don't know if he's all right, but I wish I was president. I'd start an inquiry, but this, but what I'm saying is at this point, he could do all those things. And I'm not voting for him for a second term at 82. I'm not doing that.
No.
I'm not. I'm sorry. 82 is, come on, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't,
come on,
I,
man.
I'm kind of, it's interesting because the last several, other than Obama, you know, the last several presidents have been up there in age, right? And I don't, at what point as a politician, do you go, you know what? I'm good. You know, I'm in my 60s. I've done some good things. You know, I've done some stuff. I've had a good career. I've been elected. I've served the American people. I'm okay. I'm good. I don't need to be a 78-year-old presidential candidate, you know, or a 77-year-old, you know, which Trump is, what, 77?
Yeah.
So how at what point just do we need an age limit? Do we need a term limit for, you know, why do you even, you know, as I said, just go take a nap, go rest. You know, you're 77. You've done some good. Let's, you know, step aside and let some young, and I'm not even talking considerably younger, but I'm talking, you know, people who've lived a little bit, you know, who understand kind of, you know, what the American people need. But
what would be the reason for that, right? Like, when has it ever mattered?
Age, the age of your president, when has it mattered?
When has it become, when has any pivotal event happened in the presidency because of someone's age?
Ronald Reagan had dementia. At the end of his term, you can make an argument that to the current president, Donald Trump, who has dementia in his family, is suffering from some sort of dementia. You know, I think it does matter. You also, as you get older, you tend to get more conservative, right?
Well, and you tend to get more opinionated.
Right.
So when you said, well, what makes them want to continue running? Well, the thing that got them into the shit was that they really believed they could solve all this shit. They really thought that. Like, it takes a certain amount of ego to do this.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they thought they could just swoop in and solve these things. So as they get older, they just believe that shit more.
Yeah.
So by the time they get 82, they think they know everything.
Yeah.
It's like, talk to an 82-year-old and ask them anything. Yeah. They think they know everything. So it's like, you know, that Joe Biden probably think he could, hell, 4 years from now, he'll think he could solve even more problems. When at that point, he's just one of the problems.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not like, just to be clear, I'm not necessarily saying that being conservative is a bad thing. Once you get older, but you do tend to be more conservative. And if you're going to, you know, if you already start conservative, you know, extremism in any form is a bad thing. I'm not a huge fan of the radical left either, but you know, but there does come a time in your life where, you know, it's okay to just go lay down and take a nap. You know, you don't necessarily have to become the ruler of the free world in your late 70s.
This is true, But the guy genuinely believes he can. He thinks he is the one that can solve these problems.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine, like, sitting around and everybody's walking around going, "What's 2 + 2? Man, if we could just figure out what." And you're like, "4. I know it.
I know it.
It's like, "Oh man, yeah. Please just take a break, rest." But it's like, you really think that you've got the, I don't know, man. It's like, but experience is a plus. But at a point, here's all I know. I just know that walking in there voting for an 82-year-old man to be the president is going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to be running against a Republican, and if they are any reflection of what the GOP has become, it won't be as hard as I'm saying it is. But
that will tilt the playing field a little
bit. Actually, I might moonwalk in there and do it if they continue like they are. But, you know, I mean, it is a thing. It's a thing I think about yeah. a lot. Yeah. And and that kind of dovetails into these Supreme Court justices and these lifetime appointments.
Oh, it's.
I mean, there's no way you should be sitting there at 90 years old and 85. What in the world? Clinging to life, making these damn, like, how can you sit there and focus on some, you know, voting rights case out in Mississippi, yeah. and your your body is slowly.
Is it Ruth Bader Ginsburg? God bless her. Fought off cancer how many times in her 80s? Could not possibly. I get a hangnail. I can't concentrate on what I'm doing all day.
All right, they spent half the day taking pills. How are you supposed to decide all these pills? No wonder the shit keeps getting pushed down to the. Clarence Thomas is asleep all the time. He's never not asleep. I got to go see the Supreme Court. I said, man, it's a great opportunity to see the justices. I saw 8 justices and Clarence Thomas asleep. Some of these guys are too, it's just at a point, man, like when you in and out of the hospital every week, you know, and it just becomes about somebody clinging to try to get to the next, you know, president so maybe they can have a younger.
The fact that RBG held on as long as she did for everything that she went through in the past 18 months or so is truly, I mean, what a warrior, right? I mean, she held on until the last month.
Yeah. You think she was like holding on because she wanted Trump to be finished?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, a lot of people are like, yo, you could have... You was 93 then, okay? When Obama was there, you was 93 then. You could have hung up the gavel at that point.
It's true. RB, yeah, they can retire at any point. There's no one's holding a gun to their head saying
we could stay. Yeah. We could have slid a 50-year-old in there 5 years ago. Now, come on, Roof.
It's fair. That's fair.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, sometimes you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right? As the great Kenny Rogers once told us.
How low is the bar set right now for Joe Biden, right? Like he
about could, the same height as that one they jump over when you get married.
Like, how badly would Joe Biden have to F up to be considered...
Well, he'd have to appoint Trump to something.
Oh yeah, yeah, like pardon him.
Yeah, for him to mess up that bad, Trump would have to be involved.
To make him the head of Homeland Security or something.
They should make him head of that fucking Space Force and send him up there.
Yeah, and then shoot him up in there.
Yeah, but we need you on site. And shoot his ass to the fucking moon.
Man, you know what I can't wait for?
Sick.
I can't wait. I went a long time with entire 24-hour periods, maybe even longer than that, maybe even a couple days in a row, without actively thinking about the presidency of the United States.
Man, I'm telling you.
Can you imagine what it's going to be like when we don't have to think about it every single day?
It's going to be... I can't even imagine it.
No.
Because these 3 years have seemed like 33. Ugh. So I can't even – and it's like I look at Trump. He the only president that didn't age.
Right?
He looked the same. Yeah. He's the same orange mess he was 3 years ago. He is not – it doesn't look – because he don't do shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. That's what golfing and giving speeches to adoring fans will do for you.
Yeah, and eating Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Eating Kentucky Fried
Chicken. Three meals a day. And have a doctor who will look you in the eye and tell you you're not obese.
Ain't that some shit? I'm like, that must be Michael Jackson's doctor he had. Oh. I said, what the hell? I mean, you can't. It'll be good to see him go. I was asking people, how much would you pay for a front row seat to watch him pack? Like having them watch it, like when they walk in and tell him he can't take the towels.
That's right. No, sir. You're going to have to put those back. After that. That painting of Abraham Lincoln, sir, put it back. Be like hugging it.
I tell you what, I wouldn't pay all my money, but I'd pay a few hundred dollars. And if you could promise me that at some point security is going to have to get physical, then I'd pay thousands. If you're telling me they got it, like Trump said about the kids, black kids in police cars, you know, yeah. Sometimes you got to rough them up a little bit. You know?
Holding their heads down.
Yeah, you know, you got to bang them into the car. Okay, well, yeah, I'd pay good money.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wanted, I don't know that we're going to get it, and we still might, I guess, if he doesn't, you know, agree to a peaceful transfer of power. I, at one point, really wanted a perp walk. At like 5:30 in the morning, you know, the FBI serves a no-knock warrant on the White House.
The full Roger Stone,
the white tank top, the hair all over the place. Stumbling out all bleary-eyed, escorted by a handful of armed FBI officers. Oh man. Don't get me excited.
Melania at the door with the robe peeking out. Like, what? What is going on with Donald? Is he coming back tonight?
No, ma'am, he's not.
You promise?
Oh, man. We're going to get emails.
I just, you know, ding dong, the witch is dead, man. I'm sorry. I'm just, it's been load. It's been such a load.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, these white supremacists, you know, they finally lose their little mascot.
Yeah. They need to go back under the rocks that they crawled out of when this doofus was elected. It's been a lot. You know, you're right. He hasn't aged much, but we all, everyone. Ooh,
we did. That's because, we did it for him. I look way fucking, I'm like, why am I aging like Obama did? I look at my shit. I'm like, was I the president? Why? Because I used to look at presidents and go, God damn, that's like a quantum leap. I'm like, I did the same shit this time.
Yeah. We're all looking a little long in the tooth.
Oh man, heavier. I mean, all that weight and all that stuff is stress, man. Yeah. Well, stress and I love ribs, but you know what I'm getting at.
Stress and barbecue, really.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's tough when you're a really good cook, man. People don't understand how hard that is. That's one fair. So a lot of you folks can't cook, so. You know, if you listen to this, you're like, oh, you know, you just watch what you eat. Well, it's easy to say that when you don't make good shit. But when the food you make is better than the restaurants, it's hard to not just make that all the time. Like, brother, let me tell you, I felt so bad for my wife, man. She, you know, because now she's back exercising. Mm-hmm. You know, getting as the women call it, she getting that snap back. They call it a snap back.
Right, because she's
getting back into shape. Same shape and all that stuff. So she's running hills. She's doing full Jerry Rice. Okay. So she's serious, right? So she's making it a point to do that stuff. And hold on, where was I going with that? I started talking about Jerry Rice, and I started thinking about Jerry Rice running hills.
Right. Yeah. So she's trying to get the snap back. Right. She's had two children.
Right. Right. So she's working out, trying to get the snap back. And I know there was a point to that story. Maybe we should just take a break. Yeah, let's take a break. Maybe I'll remember what the hell I was talking about. We'll be back.
At Ortho Carolina, my personalized orthopedic care feels like home because video visits bring my provider to me. Ortho Carolina, my care, my way.
Schedule your in-person or virtual appointment today at orthocarolina.com.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
International Podcast Day is September 30th, and you can help spread the word. You may be asking, what can I do to get involved? It's pretty simple. Head over to internationalpodcastday.com and check the suggestions. Then use hashtag International Podcast Day to join the conversation. You can reach out and connect with other podcasters, listeners, and your favorite podcast hosts. Remember September 30th, International Podcast Day, a day-long celebration of the power of podcasts.
In the break, in the time in between, my thought that had escaped me came back home. So I have it now. So what I was trying to say was, my wife's running these hills and she's doing all this great exercise and stuff, and I am at home making Oklahoma onion burgers. And if you have never had,
wait, yeah, I'm gonna need you to go back and tell me what that is, because that sounds great.
Brian, I got to make this for you. Oh, my God.
I'm listening.
Let me tell you. So the Oklahoma onion burger is you slice the onion in half, right? And then you slice it again. So you got the quarters.
A quarter, okay.
And each quarter you're slicing thin. So you're slicing, or you can slice it a half, just a half, and do it that way. But either way, you're slicing the onion thin, right? Mm-hmm. Really thin slices of the onion, just straight across.
Okay.
Then you're taking that and you're throwing it in maybe like a handful each on the pan with a little bit of oil, butter, whatever, to get it sizzling a little bit to start the caramelization. But you want to sprinkle a little bit of salt on it either before or during to soak up. Because, you know, naturally when you cook onions, they're going to kick out moisture.
Right.
So with these, you got to put the salt in and rinse the salt out a couple of times in the sink, or put a little salt on while the onions are, and it'll suck up that moisture. The salt will absorb it. So it won't be wet onion. Then you take the burger meat, and each patty, you formed your own patties. You're sitting it right on top of the onion, just pressing it down a little bit on top of the onion. Mm-hmm. And that damn meat and onion cooks together, and the onion creates this little crust around the burger. Mm-hmm. And then you flip it over and you have another little pile of fresh onion, and you do the same thing on the other side. Then you're taking the bun. I took my bun. I put a little butter on it, put that in the pan, got that bun crispy, and then put it on there. And my wife, who's a burger connoisseur, I mean, this woman, she's eating burgers from here to Africa, okay, to London, to wherever. She says top three burgers she ever had in her life. Wow. And I made it the other night. My wife's had hundreds of burgers.
Yes,
hundreds. I mean it, hundreds. So she said it was top three in her life. And Brian, it was that good, man. I will make this is Major League, brother. All right. You go taste this and be like, man, you figure you got to fly somewhere to get this.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'll make you, but it's called an Oklahoma onion burger. But the key is that those onions are sliced so thin, they're almost like you can almost see through it, like the onions at Jersey Mike's. Really super thin. That burger, man, that's so, and I had it. It's just flat out top two.
Yeah.
Burgers I've had in my life.
We've been doing, so we got the Kamado Grill and in the backyard now. And we've been doing, cause I got a cast iron griddle. So half the top is a cast iron griddle. So we've been doing Sunday mornings, we'll grill our breakfast. We'll do our coffee on the grill. Mm-hmm. We'll do eggs. We'll do sausage patties or bacon or whatever on this cast iron griddle. But we've been doing, sometimes on Friday nights, maybe Saturday nights, we'll do smash burgers.
Ooh. What's the concept there? Is it like Cold Stone ice cream?
A little bit like that, except with meat. Okay. Now you get the griddle really hot, right? So you let the griddle get up to like 600 degrees. And then you take a ball of meat, about maybe a quarter pound, maybe a little bit more than that, somewhere between a quarter and a half pound.
Okay. And
I've got this cast iron, round cast iron thing with a handle on it.
Oh, that you pre-compress it like you do old school? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So you put the ball of meat on the grill. And again, the griddle's like 600 degrees.
Okay.
And then you press down on the thing and you keep pressing down for like 30 seconds, right? And then you pull the paddle up and you let the first thing, it's like literally 2 minutes on each side, right? Mm. So you go 2 minutes on the first side, flip it over 2 minutes on the other side, and the grill's really hot. So it gets this crust on it and it's really thin, and you put a little garlic powder and salt in there. And then like for the last 30 seconds or so, you put a slice of cheddar cheese on top of it.
Come on now. Oh
yeah. We got to have a burger off.
You know what? And let me tell you something. When you have a burger off, everybody's a winner. I've never lost a burger off. Yeah. I've been in hundreds. I've never lost one. Everybody wins at a burger off.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. We'll have to do it. So this is also take me through a little bit, this cooking the breakfast on the grill process.
Yes.
So you this is a charcoal grill?
It's the Kamado style grill. So it's like a Big Green Egg, right? So it's a ceramic. It's a big, heavy, like 150-pound ceramic grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really versatile, right? So you can use it as a smoker. You can use it as a grill. You can change the level of the grates and to get different kinds of heat. There's two ceramic plates that you can put inside for direct or indirect heat. You can split. You can only use half of the plate, and have one half of the grill be direct heat, and one half be indirect heat. Mm-hmm. So you could sear a steak on the direct heat, and then move it over to the indirect to avoid burning it. It's super versatile. You can make pizza on it. I've got a rotisserie attachment, so we do rotisserie chicken. It's great. So we got this cast iron griddle.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically covers. We're going to get the other half too, but it basically covers half of the surface. So the surface of the grill is 18 inches across, right? Okay. So it's a round grill. It's about 18 inches across. So this cast iron griddle covers half of that, right? Okay. And we'll get another one. We'll get the second one eventually to cover the whole thing with the cast iron griddle. But again, with cast iron, you get it up to, 500, 600 degrees. And we do bacon on it. We did sausage patties last week, and we do eggs on it. So this woman that I work with at the school has her own chickens. And so she's been my supplier for eggs for the past several weeks. And she'll just bring in literally a dozen eggs that were laid this morning.
Oh, that is so much. Remember when we had DC Curry on the podcast and he said the chicken fresh – out that the chicken's behind that egg is as good as it gets.
Yeah, and it's not like you get the white eggs at the supermarket that have all been like treated and bleached and everything. These are like, I mean, these are far, like it does get
They're pretty brown rounds.
Yeah, they're brown or blue or this nice green color. The only way to get any more fresh would be if you went in and grabbed it yourself out of the right. That's
right.
The only way it could be any more fresh, because like literally, she says these eggs are, you know, like they're still warm when she takes them, and there's something about an egg that hasn't been treated, that hasn't been bleached to within an inch of its life.
So fluffy.
They're just fantastic. Yeah.
They're like eating pillows.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just really, really good. And you know, so we do that on the grill. We'll heat up our coffee. We make Vietnamese coffee, which is this little drip thing you put on a cup. So you just put the coffee in the drip thing, and then you just pour hot water onto the thing, and it runs down into the cup, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a pour over at Starbucks, but it's a little, you know, it's not $5. And so we'll heat up the water on the grill. We've got the griddle going. We'll do bacon. We'll do eggs. We'll make pancakes. So that's our Sunday morning thing. So yeah, it's losing weight is darn near impossible right now. is what I'm saying.
Well, see, but you know what? That kind of ritual brings you so much joy.
Yeah,
you gotta take the joy where you can get it right now. You know, some things you just got to let it hang a little bit. You know, that's how I feel. So I'm just saying, now let me ask you this. When you're cooking it that way, what are there any differences in the taste when you're cooking that way as opposed to being inside on a regular burner?
I think there is. Yeah. I mean, like with the sausage, you know, I'll throw a little hickory or mesquite wood on the coals, you know, so they'll get a little smoky flavor. With the eggs, I think the eggs taste different when when they're prepared over charcoal than, you know, if they're just on a pan on the
stove. You scrambling those, or how does that work?
Break the egg over the grill.
Okay.
Over the griddle. It'll spread out. The yolk stays whole. And then, you know, you just kind of wait for the egg white to cook all the way. Uh-huh. You know, maybe you close the lid for a couple of minutes. Maybe you don't. But, you wait for the egg white to cook all the way. And then the yolk is a little runny. So it's good, you know, for dipping toast in or your pancake, whatever. It's the best, man. It's just great. You know, it's become kind of our Sunday morning thing. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I put the work down for a couple hours and just kind of hang out on Sunday morning. It's a good thing. Yeah.
Very nice. And that's, and it's nice for you because it's like, you'd be able to spend that time with your wife. It's quiet.
Yeah.
You're enjoying some good food. Cause here's what you know. Okay. What you know is that at 1 o'clock, you're going to watch the Detroit Lions get their ass kicked. So you go into a Sunday knowing that part, right?
That's exactly
it. So that part, that train is never late. Okay, so that's coming. So then on the front end, it's nice that you had this moment of peace and enjoyment, the calm before that, you know, eventual storm of disappointment.
The inevitable letdown of a Detroit Lions football game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's coming. And the thing about the Lions is they ain't going to get blown out. Matter of fact, they're going to make it look like they are going to blow somebody out.
Mm-hmm, that's right. They're going to have a lead early. Yep.
And then they're going to figure out a way to get beat.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want to go down a tangent about the Lions, but
no,
I don't know why Caldwell's not still there. He's gone for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't have an answer either. It's an entire lifetime of, you know, just horrible decisions, bad coaching. You know, they've had talent off and on. You know, they had arguably one of the best running backs the league's ever seen. Before that they had Billy Sims. They've had Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, Andre Ware. Chuck Long was a Heisman Trophy runner up. You know, I don't know.
Well, if we talk about sports, I would be remiss not to mention the Los Angeles Lakers, right? Bringing down the NBA championship. Sorry about that.
but
LeBron, Brow, Anthony Davis, and you know, I was watching it, and I thought to myself, like, this sort of era of player empowerment, where guys kind of chart their own courses. Anthony Davis isn't happy in New Orleans, so he angles his and leverages his way out of that situation, goes to the team he wants to go to. And there's just something about being able to say, because one day the history books are going to look back on these teams like we look back on those Celtics teams or those Laker teams, Sixers teams, all these teams, you know, from years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was around and got to watch LeBron and Anthony Davis, man. And without players being able to control their own destinies, you wouldn't get opportunities to see those guys like that. I know some people don't like it because, yeah, you know, it's like a town can't hold on to a team. But it's like, to me, that puts the onus on the team to manage well. I've never seen a player leave a team managing well, right? Like, I've never seen a player go, this is a winning situation, we're doing great, and I'm going to leave anyway. Not the guy they drafted. I'm not talking about Kawhi, where he was, you know, came in the middle of the season and left. No, I've never seen a guy get drafted by a team and the team be a great team like the Spurs were, or, you know, and Tim Duncan being like, you know what, I want out of here after. It always happens with these teams that trip over themselves and they have incompetent management. And to be honest with you, they don't deserve an Anthony Davis. Okay, the New Orleans Pelicans didn't deserve Anthony Davis. I'm sorry, they didn't. You know, you give a guy like that wasting the prime of his career with a management group that can't put anybody around him and doesn't really give a damn about winning anyway. Right. You know, like, give me a break. I'm glad he was able to get out of there. And then we got to watch him. Now he's going to go down as one of the great Lakers big men, cementing his legacy on the biggest stage in the world. That's where Anthony Davis belongs. He's a world-class player. You want him stuck on the damn Pelicans? You know, I'm all for it, man. I'm all for it. I'm you know me, I'm always going to be on the side of the players generally anyway, but on this one, I'm like, yeah, man, like, these teams that we get to see play together, if they had it their way, man, you know, James Harden would be stuck in Oklahoma. Somebody else would be somewhere else. Like,
yeah. You know. I mean, but to be fair, though, it's only those A-list players who get to choose where they want to go, right? Like, you know, the Tony Snell is not going to be able to, you know, to dictate where he wants to go or have any leverage whatsoever to go, like, I want to go play with LeBron. LeBron's like, who? Tony what?
Yeah. As the great Mike Goodwin would say, comedian Mike Goodwin, what you're not going to do is walk in this office and tell me who you want to play with. You lucky you still have a key to the facility. Way you played last week.
Yeah, I mean, there's what? Maybe 8 or 10 players in the league who would get to kind of dictate where they want to go. And then the rest of them are either stuck where they are or on their way out of the league, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you're right. It is a small group of players. But as a fan, as a consumer of the product, I'm all for watching LeBron and AD in the finals. And it's like, you know, to the other teams, if, you know, the NBA is such a global sport now that location doesn't really matter like that.
Right.
Like, if you build a great team, I don't care if it's in Utah, Chicago, Houston, wherever it is, they're going to be the guys. Golden State was never that was never a basketball town we cared about like that.
Yeah,
but no, they got good. Yeah, and now, guess what? Curry's a superstar. It doesn't matter where they are anymore like it used to.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I think it puts the onus on these cities. Because I'm not in love with the idea of college players not being able to decide where the hell they want to play anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea that they come out and these shitty teams – get to take them and screw away the first 7 years of their careers too, I'm about sick of seeing that. But, I just think that, you know, these guys' ability to do that is giving us an opportunity to see combinations that you would just dream about or that you would think about. You know, as a kid, I grew up, you know, and my uncle, we've had my uncle on the podcast talking about me and my fandom. shouts out to Dr. Sid, but I couldn't imagine when I was a kid, Charles Barkley, you know, being a fan of Charles Barkley and him being able to just go, you know what, I'm going to get with Michael Jordan and we're going to take Magic and them down.
Right.
It just, it wasn't the way it was done then. A guy played for a place and that was it. You either won there or you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Where now, you know, it's a little bit different. And it's like, I loved it back then, but I've just adjusted with the times, man. I don't think as a fan, you really can't get invested in the players in the same way. They don't stay long enough. Teams, mm-hmm. and it's not just players leaving. Teams cut them,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I mean, Le'Veon Bell just got cut.
Le'Veon Bell, yeah.
He went to the Chiefs, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
But yeah, so it's a different kind of, like my son, I can already tell he's gonna like sports. It's gonna be a way different experience for him. Like, you're gonna grow up kind of cheering for teams,
mm-hmm.
You know, like when a player leaves your team, he's just gone.
Yeah.
It used to be, it was so rare that a player left your team that when he did, half the time you stuck with the player and you they'd be your second team or something.
Yeah. Even as I mean, far back, but kind of recently as like, you know, Joe Montana, you know, always identified as a San Francisco 49er, but you forget he played, you know, his last couple of years with the Chiefs.
You totally forget that.
Yeah. And even like, you know, Brett Favre, you know, you forget about him in a Jets jersey.
Yeah.
I find as I'm getting older and as I'm getting considerably older than the athletes who play on these teams, I find myself interested in kind of watching how the league develops and things like that. But I find myself less emotionally invested in what's happening with the Lions or even, you know, what's happening with the Red Wings or whatever, because I don't really know who these guys are anymore.
Mm.
You know, I don't, you know, I can name maybe four or five members of the Detroit Lions.
Wow.
You know, right now. And I'm kind of okay with it. You know, I still want them to do well. I would love for them to win anything. You know, I will probably, if they ever do even sniff around the Super Bowl, I'll probably get teary eyed. But I find myself much less emotionally interested, because someone described sports, you know, especially in the free agent era a long time ago, as you know, you're basically you're cheering for laundry, you know what I mean, you're cheering for the colors of the team that don't change, but the players rotate in and out of those uniforms all the time. It's hard to get emotionally invested in a team when the players move around like that.
Well, it's really just, I mean, it really is just a college fan's mindset, right? I mean, they cheer for programs and coaches and stuff like that. And that's just kind of what you kind of got to do with the NFL. I mean, even buying jerseys, like, you know, we got guys that for the Eagles that, okay, you know, some guys been there so long.
Yeah.
They have to get one now. But
yeah, but like, you know, you're 40, right? Or 41?
Yeah, 41.
You know, are you going to run out and buy, you know, a 21-year-old first-round draft picks jersey for that? That's weird.
Nah, I can't do it.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to get a Detroit Red Wings sweater, like, you know, an authentic game, not game worn, but, you know, a nice, you know, Detroit Red Wings jersey. And we were going to put, you know, numbers and names on the back. And I'm like, I don't know, you know, like, I'm a couple months older than Steve Yzerman. You know, I just, you know, like, that feels weird. I'm not going to put, you know, the name and number of some 24-year-old guy from Sweden on my back. So I went back to the Red Wings goaltender back in the 60s. His name was Terry Sawchuk. He was one of the last NHL goaltenders to not wear a mask.
Ooh.
And I was like, you know what?
Well, I know his teeth must have been jacked up.
Oh, you should Google it sometime. Yeah. he's in a face even a mother would have to think about loving. And but I was just like, you know, I can get behind kind of a throwback jersey, you know, a Gordie Howe, a Terry Sawchuk, something like that, you know, but I'm not going to wear the jersey of a 24-year-old kid.
You know? Yeah, I'm the same way. I just, you know, I got my Cunningham, I got my McNabb, you know, but McNabb was probably the last generation of cats that I'm going to be wearing their jerseys like that. Yeah. Or now, you know, I would say an exception, but no, I can't think, like, if somebody came, like if Carson Wentz won a Super Bowl, I still don't think I'm going to get a Carson Wentz jersey.
No.
I'm getting my son one.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm not.
Yeah, no. And honestly, if you're talking for the Eagles, that old Randall Cunningham jersey, those are sweet.
That's the one.
Those are with the flappy sleeves.
Oh,
those are the best, man.
Those
look great.
What? Oh, man, that's just – I mean, I could just – that era in time was something else, man. I mean, just that – I remember Sports Illustrated with that Weapon X cover.
Yeah.
Or the ultimate weapon, I think they said. And it was Randall Cunningham. I was like, oh my God. It was just something we had never seen. Yeah. It was just, I mean, this guy, I mean, people take that for granted now. I mean, they're watching guys like Lamar Jackson. They're watching Russell Wilson. They're watching guys just run all over the place. Yeah. But that was not at all how it was back then. Matter of fact, the faster you were, they just said that made you a cornerback or something. They wouldn't like a yard start behind the eight ball being black. They didn't want you to be a quarterback, but you know, so, but man, like he was the first guy really, you know, you got Fran Tarkenton running.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Steve Young,
but just this
deceptively fast. Yeah.
Great. Deceptively. But this uber athlete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he was, before Michael Vick, Randall Cunningham was the guy that we had never seen before.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
That jersey is most definitely is a one I would wear. I, you know, my probably favorite Eagles jerseys I would wear are I have a McNabb jersey, but Cunningham, most definitely Reggie White. The minister of defense, and Brian Dawkins.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably my three all-time Eagles. So if you had to, but that's a good question. If you had to name your three favorite, that'd have to be greatest or best, but just all-time Detroit Lions.
Well, my personal favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you know, there was nothing better than watching Barry Sanders run.
Oh.
You know, that's a given. I was there his rookie year in training camp. We were covering the Lions. And, you know, I got to hang out at Lions training camp for 3 or 4 days because we were producing, you know, a whole bunch of stories for Lions preview shows and stuff like that. And even just watching him in practice, you're just like, man, this kid's going to be special. I mean, this kid is just going to be really, really good. I always liked Lomas Brown when I was Brown was an offensive tackle, not a particularly big guy, you know, was maybe 6'3" or so, but just a loose truck, you know, I mean, it was just running guys over, but just had that really kind of quiet demeanor, was not a particularly demonstrative player.
Now, was he the one that lost his mind when he got hit with the flag in the face?
Oh, no. That guy was on the Bengals, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a different guy. Okay.
Yeah. Lomas Brown would have played. He played when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. Got you.
And then probably, I mean, I always like, you know, I always like Benny Blades.
Okay. When he
was with the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I don't know. I always kind of like the offensive linemen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So guys like Eric Andelsek. you know,
well, that's a lineman name right there. Exactly. What's it again? What is that?
Eric Andelsek.
That's his boy. That's
he is now dead. He was killed. He was in his front yard. Here's like the Lions luck. Talk about that. He was in his front yard in like Tennessee or something like that. And a guy, dude lost control of his pickup truck and just wiped Eric Andelsek out in his front yard.
Oh my God.
Front yard of his house. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's a cursed franchise.
That is, oh my God.
Yeah. So good times.
Jesus.
Mike Utley. I always liked Mike Utley before he got hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they've always had, you know, good receivers, you know, Herman Moore, you know, Charlie Sanders, if you go way back in the day. Billy Sims was fun to watch.
Megatron.
Yeah, yep.
You think he was the greatest receiver for Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because people talk about, like, you know, oh, you know, Calvin Johnson's a Hall of Famer. I'm like, did he play long enough? Like, I don't know.
He didn't play that long.
Yeah, no, he didn't. And I don't know. I mean, certainly not. It's probably a, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer, maybe, but or not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but maybe later, you know, maybe a couple of ballots down the road if it's a week. I don't know. I feel like the part of being a Hall of Famer to me is, you know, certainly longevity, you know, greatness over an extended period of time, but also how you helped your team achieve greatness.
And I think the shorter your prime was, the greater you had, like, that much better than everyone else you had to be.
Right. Terrell Davis comes to mind.
Right.
Right. So a relatively short career, but
dominant.
What he was able to do, you know, with the Denver Broncos franchise at a time when they were already good. But, you know, Barry Sanders, I that's just a special talent. You know, you have to recognize that. But I think he played long enough, but guys who are only in the league 4 or 5 years, but maybe didn't necessarily do it, you know, what's his face from the Colts who just retired a couple seasons ago?
Luck.
Andrew Luck. Didn't stay in the league a real long time and also kind of didn't really help his team achieve greatness. You know, they were good, but never made it to the Super Bowl, never, you know.
Well, I tell you what, he did help keep a lot of incompetent people employed. That owner, that general manager, Gregson, he came from Philadelphia. I thought he might be okay. That man didn't know. Oh my gosh, he didn't know a punter from a lineman. He was terrible, and to be honest, he's one of the parties responsible for Andrew Luck being retired. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, just their failure to put a line around him. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, drafting guys like Philip Dorsett in the second round when Luck was leading the league in sacks. Just some of this is indefensible, man. Indefensible. Ryan Grigson. Yeah. But that just speaks to the power of having a franchise quarterback, especially a guy's elite like Luck. It's just, you're never not going to be in the wild card playoff mix because they're so good. And the thing is, I think for some of these owners, it masks a lot of the deficiencies, you know, and you see it because the minute that they go down, everything goes to shit.
Right.
Right. Right. The backup comes in and they lose every game and it looks horrible. And it's because, like, that quarterback was holding so many things up. Like, that's why when they talk about what Patrick Mahomes and these guys get paid, it's like, whatever the hell he wants. It doesn't matter. Like, because there are so many positions that you can take a substandard player at because Mahomes is going to put up 40 points. Mm-hmm. Like, I can name you 3 guys from the Kansas City defense, maybe 4.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it doesn't matter. Because they have Patrick Mahomes. And it's the same thing with Seattle and Russell Wilson now. I mean, this guy's lost his mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Russ has gone crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know in the fantasy football community, the slogan used to be, let Russ cook, right? Yeah. Everybody wanted to say, just get out of the way. Enough with this running the ball down their throat shit.
Yeah.
Shot nine. We just wanted to run. Let Russ just throw it. He's the best passer in the league. Yeah. Finally this year, which, you know, unfortunately for my fantasy teams, I didn't know because I should have had some of these guys. I drafted no Seahawks in any leagues and they're lighting the league up.
Yeah.
Russell, they're finally letting Russ throw it, and DK Metcalf is just a star.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we had an opportunity, Philadelphia Eagles draft DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. We chose JJ Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah.
Who's got about three targets on the season. But anyway, DK Metcalf had two touchdowns last week.
Solid decision.
Yeah. We're doing great. But anyway, we'll see what happens, man. If I had to say early on, though, the way Russ is playing, I just don't know who's going to take those guys out.
Yeah, I don't know.
NFC, I don't.
Yeah, they're playing awfully well. I still don't know. I mean, the Chiefs appear to be the team to beat in the AFC. I still don't think, you know, you can count the Patriots out if Cam Newton recovers from, you know, COVID-19 and is, you know, and they continue to use him the way they were using him in those first couple games. You know, I think the Patriots will have something to say in the AFC. The Steelers are looking good right now.
That's the team I was going to mention. Oh, yeah. My God. If that defense continues to play like that, they can beat any damn body.
Yeah.
I mean, that defense is frightening.
Yeah. And that's assuming that we'll be able to finish the NFL season, which at this point, I feel like it's a bit of a coin flip. If we'll be able to finish at all, but
yes, I guess that's one of those to be continued items. Because that's a thing. Yeah, that is a thing. But we didn't mention Jason. Jason's not here this week. He's off doing something important. That's all I ever know, really.
He'll be back. He'll be back next week, I believe. But yeah,
Jason is like that Lil Wayne lyric when Lil Wayne said, "Real G's move in silence like lasagna."
He said that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Like, if you a G, like, you know.
Oh,
you know,
the G in lasagna is silent. Oh, it's a grammar. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just thought, like, lasagna is generally a quiet food.
Well, yeah. It's just got that moisture.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about
like
it.
The G in lasagna. All right. I get it.
Yeah, so Jason he's moving in silence. He's not telling us about all these moves he's making, but we just know he ain't here.
Yeah.
So, and we know it's important because, I mean, you don't miss this unless it's.
Yeah, no, this is priorities. Yeah.
That's how I know whatever he's doing, he's moving in silence like lasagna.
Okay.
Yeah.
But does, wait. Now, what is the actual line? Is it does the actual line mention the letter G?
Yeah, he said real. He said I don't talk because something like I don't talk, but the end of it was I don't talk because real G's move in silence like lasagna.
Okay, all right. As long as you're mentioning, because otherwise that line makes zero sense.
If you don't mention the letter G,
gotcha.
Like we move in silence like lasagna, then you'd be like, well, lasagna is really a little bit squishy sounding.
Yeah,
if you think about it. But no, yeah, real G's move in silence.
Right. Well, that makes a lot more sense now.
Well, then I feel like our job here is done, man. That's all I got for this week, really.
We've done good work.
We covered a lot, man. We covered the presidency, Supreme Court. We covered what else?
Ageism. We offended old people.
Oh, well, you did.
Yeah, I did. Really, that was me.
I was just trying to be a good teammate. That
was all me.
Because when you first said it, I kind of recoiled a little bit. But I just said, you know what? That's my guy, and we're going to, you know.
That's my quarterback.
Oh, man. Speaking of that, good God. Man, thoughts, prayers, shouts out. Dak Prescott, man, that was gruesome. Yeah. Gruesome. And you know what? We got to say it. We got to talk about it. In the offseason, he was trying to get a long-term contract. Dallas didn't want to give him the numbers. They couldn't come to an agreement. He played anyway.
Yeah.
That whole thing is different now.
Yeah. Yep.
Whatever they offer him, it's going to be so incentive laden.
Yeah.
Like there's no way he's going to come back from that injury and they not just put a whole bunch of incentives and shit in there. So it's just not going to be the same contract it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's – so these players that sit out and we go, oh, what about the team? Well, your fucking ankles hanging like that. Team then. What about then?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like these guys have to look out for themselves. And yeah, I think a lot of times the media makes a bigger deal out of it than the players do because the players get it.
Yeah.
Because the players trying to get their money the next time their contract comes up.
Yeah.
And they're going to sit the hell out too. So they get it. I've never seen a player go, except for, you know, one or two Steelers. You know, the Steelers just, you know, whatever. They try to have something honor. I don't know if it was Breonna Taylor. It was somebody else that had been killed up there in Pittsburgh, police brutality situation. Mm. And they wanted to honor the players. And, of course, you had the one Steeler. I don't know if it was Villanueva or whoever. He wants to put a police officer's name that was gunned down, which is sad enough. But that ain't what we're talking about right now. Okay.
Yeah.
You could do that. Yeah. You could do that round of helmets next week. We talking about doing this one this week, but he got to be that. So the Steelers always got one or two guys like that, that, you know, players looking out for themselves, their money. I remember when Le'Veon was trying to get his money and stuff. And some of them comments them guys made was like, you know, I wish you'd be a man of his word and be around for the team. They the only team I'd be hearing talking like that.
Yeah.
Most other teams kind of get this.
Yeah.
So, you know, see how the season goes, man. But we'll see, man. It's just sad. He seems like, you know, they sent another video, showed another video of him smiling and being upbeat. And so it seems like he's trying to take a positive attitude toward it. But if I'm the next player looking at that, I'm like, I'm not playing another down until we figure my money out.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wasn't going to tell you about this off mic, but I think we've talked about it. I'm producing Steve Smith's Senior's new podcast. And he released an episode a couple weeks ago that told his side of the story about what happened when the Panthers released him.
Mm.
And it's really good.
I had heard about that.
Yeah, it's called Steve's Truth. If you get a chance to go back and listen to it, but
the reaction's been strong on that.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to hear him tell that story because there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, we just didn't know. You know, Panthers fans made a lot of assumptions about his relationship with Cam Newton, and you know all of that stuff. And you know, it turns out none of that stuff was true. But the teams that Steve almost ended up with are really, really interesting.
Wow.
Even like, you know, the year before the Panthers released him, he almost ended up a San Francisco 49er, but they wanted him to void his contract. And he said, I'm not voiding my contract.
Hmm.
And so they didn't sign him. And then he ended up playing one more year with the Panthers. And then they released him after that season. But it's worth going back and listening to because it's just really, really good.
Yeah, I'll be interested. I mean, that's one of the great players. Steve Smith, that playoff run of his in 2015 is one of the great singular playoff runs I've ever seen by a wide receiver. I mean, that damn run Larry Fitzgerald had when Arizona went to the Super Bowl was pretty strong too.
Yeah.
But Steve Smith that year, I mean, somebody go back and look at the numbers. Go back and look at just the performances. I mean, he was just dominant in 2015.
If you go back even the earlier, you know, go back to his rookie season, the first time he touched the football in the NFL was like a 98-yard punt return for a touchdown, something crazy like that. And he should not, you know, you look at his size, you know, he'll be the first person to tell you, he should not have been able to do the things he did for as long as he did in the NFL. But he was just, I'm talking about just grit and strength and a mean streak and just, you know, just the will and determination to be a wideout in the NFL. I mean, it's you know, the stuff he accomplished is super impressive on its surface alone. But, you know, when you look at his size, you know, again, just an undersized guy with all the grit in the world. And you talk about a guy who you know, had the longevity and had the numbers, but played for a team that really didn't do a whole lot, you know, in terms of playoffs and going to the Super Bowl and stuff. But yet, you know, I mean, I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to go back and dig through the numbers, but that hearing that doesn't sound crazy.
Look, just go to YouTube and search for Steve Smith highlights, and it's you forget how good he was.
Oh God, yeah. Just so explosive, high pointing the ball, all that good stuff.
Just the straight, just swatting guys aside, man. You know, I mean, the guy's bigger than he is. Just stiff arm. Just
oh, like a well. How tall was he? How tall?
Is he? He's like 5'6". I mean, he is
a 5'6" bully.
Yeah. Yeah.
A 5'6" bully at the receiver position. Fantastic. So you know, to have that voice on the network is a serious feather in the cap. So,
well, he's not on the network, but that's all right. That's,
he's not?
That's okay. No, because he's iHeartRadio bought his podcast. So,
producing a show
for iHeart. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So not having his voice on the network.
Yeah, coming this close to having his voice on the network,
having us talk about his voice being on the network is big for the network.
Yeah, well, it is ultimately still big for the network, but yeah.
Well, I mean, ultimately, anything that happens great for you happens great for the network.
Absolutely,
that's you're kind of the same way that the pastors do it. To say, look, I know I'm riding in the jet, but this is all our jet, okay? I know I call it Balto Media and it's taking over the world, but we all in the jet.
Well, figuratively speaking, you're all in here with me.
I mean, technically, yeah, it's going to say I produce a podcast for Steve Smith, okay? It's going to say that. But really, we all produce a podcast. You put it on your resume, too. It just better not be anywhere I'm applying, but but anyway, man, yeah, that's fantastic though that you get to work with him, and that's pretty cool for real.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you know, getting to know him and Gerard Littlejohn and kind of the people around him. Steve keeps a pretty tight circle, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of nice to, you know, to get a glimpse into that, and just to have him trust us to. You know, to produce a show is, you know, it's good for us. So
no doubt, man. No doubt. Yeah. Congrats on that one. Well, that's all I got for this week, man. You have anything coming up, anything to plug?
I do want to mention there are 2 weeks or so left in the Charlotte Podcast Festival. CharlottePodcastFestival.com is the website. Check us out. I'm moderating a couple panels and giving a couple presentations over the last couple weeks. So just check that out, CharlottePodcastFestival.com. I mean, I do want to mention, really, for no reason other than just kind of for myself, the guy I knew in Tucson, Arizona. So when my wife and I moved to Tucson, Arizona, I got involved with a sketch comedy group called The People Who Do That. And one of the guys in the group's name was Mike Daniel, Misha. They called him Big Bald Guy. Just the sweetest guy in the world, super smart, really, really nice guy, really funny. They passed away suddenly this week.
Oh, man.
About 47 years old. And that's it's a tough, you know, I hadn't talked to Mike in a long time, but it's one of those things that when you hear about it, it's just kind of a, you know, a kick in the gut.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who just, you know, the world was just a better place with Mike in it, you know, and it was a real shock to wake up this morning and hear that he had passed. So, you know, thoughts go out to Melinda, his wife, and to the rest of the members of the sketch group, the people who do that, who are all working in California now. But you know, it's just, you know, guys that young shouldn't just randomly drop dead. It's an eye-opening thing. And the more it happens to people around you, the older you get, the more it starts to happen. And yeah. it's a weird thing. So, you know, condolences to Melinda and his family. But Mike was just a really, really good guy, and the world's a little darker place without him.
Yeah, very, very, very sorry to hear that, man. Very sorry for your loss and his family. And oh man, yeah, that's very young, very young.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny when you're young, 47 sounds old as hell, right? When you're like 10, yeah. 11, 12. You're like 40. That's an old ass man. Mm-hmm. But then you get 30, it's like, 40's not that old. And then you get 40 and you're like, well, shit, 40 ain't old. So when you, as a 41-year-old and you at in your 50s, you hear 47.
Yeah.
It's like it really does. I mean, you hate to say it, but it immediately puts your mortality.
Oh, 100%.
You know, in the front, you know, in the mainframe.
Yeah. I remember thinking about when thought kind of first really hit me was when I was, so in 1980, John Lennon got killed, and John Lennon was, you know, my favorite Beatle. And, you know, so I was a huge John Lennon fan. I had read all the biographies, and the Beatles, of course, you know, are the Beatles. And so 1980, John Lennon gets killed. I am 14 years old when he got killed, and he was 40. And I'm like, you know what? He had a good run. He did some stuff. You know, it's really tragic what happened to him. But I didn't wrap my head around what that meant until I was about 43 or 44 and thought back to what I thought, you know. And then, like, the light kind of came on. It was like, he had his whole life in front of him. Right. You know, and you know, he had just released a new album, and he would have released, you know, how much more music before. You know, I mean, he was only 40. You know, he was in the prime of his life. And you just don't think that when you're a kid. And you go, oh, he was 40. He had a good run. You know, and then, you know, you reach a certain age and, you know, then your friends start to kind of drop off a bit. And people have health issues they didn't know about, or they don't take very good care of themselves. And they, you know, or, you know, a motorcycle accident or something, you know, happens. And it takes away a guy that, you know, the only thing that you knew about him was, you know, he was just a really sweet guy, and he was full of life, and he was just fun to be around, and you know, and all of a sudden he's just gone. And it's just a really, really weird thing. The older you get, you know, as your friends kind of start to drop off, and you've lost a friend or two too. So you know what it's like when these people pass away. So just, I think probably what I'm trying to say is that shit comes at you fast, and life is really, really short, and it's too short to get mixed up in all this hate and debate and I'm right and you're wrong stuff. And, you know, let's just live our lives and hug the people close to you. You know, if you love somebody, tell them. And, you know, let's just all kind of get through this the best we can, you know.
Yeah it's yeah, man, that's a good note to end on, man. We'll see. So we will, next time we'll be back, it'll be what, November?
Well, hopefully we'll be back next week. So that'll still be October. October for 2 more weeks.
And then, well, I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm on paternity leave. So the days.
So you're not even really sure what day it is. Yeah.
I mean, every day is the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I'm up late at night with my son, and I'm like, it's Friday. Let him stay up. It's definitely Tuesday.
How long are you on paternity leave? So this is, this is October 15th as we record this.
Yeah, I'm on paternity leave until, like, November 9th.
Oh, so you got, let's see, 3 full weeks left, a little over 3 weeks left.
Yeah, it was a month total, so.
Nice, all right.
Oh, yeah. So I just been a lot of cooking, a lot of fishing. Well, I mean, we'll talk about that next week, a lot of fishing. I just, that's my new thing. I mean, I used to fish when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I just kind of got back into it. And now I'm just every morning, man, if you want to catch up with me, you meet me at 6 a.m. at one of these docks. I'm out there.
All right. Well, I'm not sure how to respond. Where do you fish around here?
Well, let's say for a little context, my real football team is terrible. All my fantasy football teams are terrible. So you know how they say people have gone fishing.
Yeah.
I literally have gone fishing. And it maybe something about losing make you want to fish. That's probably why that they say that. Okay. I didn't realize until I became a loser. It made me want to fish. So now I'm fishing all the time.
Huh. And this is now where, so there's two big lakes here, Lake Norman, Lake Wylie. Do you go to one of the lakes or?
I go to Lake Wylie, but I hit the ponds and the creeks too. So there's a couple ponds and creeks or I go to, but yeah, like there's this Copperhead Island where you can fish right out on the dock, the piers. Uh-huh. I go there. I go to, what is it? I go to Lake, I go there. I go to the McDowell Nature Preserve. I fish there. So yeah, there's about five or six spots I go to probably.
Mm-hmm. At six in the morning.
Well, depends on when I get up, but usually about, I mean, the kids wake up maybe about 8:30, 8. So I'm probably out there from like 5:30 to 8, something like that. Oof.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm definitely out there in the dark and I love it. Cause see, that's when the fish, you know, I mean, they say one of the best times is about an hour before sunrise.
Yeah.
So I'm out there. A lot of fun. Huh. And very peaceful when that, man, especially sure. out on Lake Wylie, when that mist comes up over the water. And, you know, some people see that and think about Jason coming up out of it. I look at it and I see it and it's just peace, just peaceful. No yeah. sense of fear. Very, very, very comfortable out there by myself.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I knew you pretty well.
Yeah, right.
This is new. This is new information. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. So maybe you meet me out on the docks. Maybe not at 6 a.m. Well, definitely
I will not.
Six
I will yeah, not. You want, no, but, that's not something I'm going to do. But I appreciate the invitation. But yeah.
Well, that's not gonna, that's what. Not gonna well, if you ever change your mind, I'm never leaving.
I will happily whatever you catch. I will happily grill it for you someday. But yeah, I'm probably not going to.
Okay. Fish. That's pretty cool. That'll work. Well, that's all I got, man. On behalf of myself, Jason Allen King, who is somewhere doing something important, and Mr. Brian Baltashevitz himself, that's all I got for this week. Best of luck. Stand back and stand by.
Comedy Zone Podcast is a production of Comedy Zone Worldwide and is recorded in a bunker just off the Comedy Zone showroom at the Abbott Exchange Music Factory in Charlotte, North Carolina. The executive producers of the Comedy Zone Podcast are Brian Heffern and Brian Baltashevitz. Talent Wrangler is Mike Hall. Original music composed and performed by John McKeever.